Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, are young British Muslims committed to Islam?
Despite the claims that young British Muslims are less committed to Islam than their parents, several reports have proved the opposite. A think tank survey suggested that the younger generation is much more likely to be attracted to political forms of Islam. The report also shows that the support for Sharia law, Islamic schools, and the wearing of the veil is far stronger among young Muslims. Another research shows that religion remained an important part of the day-to-day lives of British Asian youngsters. The implications of these results were extremely worrying for Conservative leader David Cameron, who concluded that young Muslims feel more separated from Britain than their parents. However, these results were not pointing to a failure in multiculturalism, according to a Cambridge University report, which was based on interviews with students in London. The study found that young British Muslims are better integrated into the British society than their parents. To better evaluate the commitment of young British Muslims to Islam, this episode of Islam in Life asks, are young British Muslims committed to Islam?
This is a question which is important because in the public discourse, what we get from the political activists or the political figures or political parties is the more you are committed to Islam, the less you are integrated to the society. This is the image, this is the perception. While at the same time, the figures and the statistics are showing today that it could be exactly the opposite, that we have a young generation of Western Muslims, European Muslims, British Muslims, more committed to Islam and at the same time more integrated to the society. So what is the relationship between this and that? And is it true that the young generation is more committed to Islam? And which kind of commitment? Is it much more a question of politics? It's a question of rules and literalist understanding or a spiritual commitment to Islam? These are important questions when it comes to assess the situation of British Muslims or European Muslims. To answer all these questions, I'm joined by Mohammed Shafiq, the Chief Executive of Ramadan Foundation, which is a UK leading Muslim youth organization. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello.
We got this image. The statistics are showing, yes, the younger generations, the youth are more committed to Islam. They come back to learn about their religion. It's part of their life. And at the same time, it seems that they are more integrated, while the worries and the way it's perceived by political parties is the opposite, that the more you are committed to your religion, the less you are integrated into your society. You are yourself a British Muslim, born and raised in Britain, coming from Pakistan, your family is coming from there, but you are involved in an organization. How is your feeling about the whole situation?
I think the important thing to recognise is that young Muslims make a valuable contribution to British society. And if you look at that across our country here in the UK, we see Muslims actively involved in their mosque, actively involved in their community, and actively involved in organisations. And I think Muslims, young Muslims in particular, there seems to be a reawakening of Islam since 9/11 in particular, of Islam amongst young Muslims. And yes, young Muslims are more committed to Islam. They're committed to different elements of Islam. They're committed to the political element because they want to see a political resolution of the Palestinian cause, or they want to support the Arab Spring and more freedom and more Islam for the people who live around the world. Or if it's support for community level, charity work. And so I think in every walk of life, Muslims are making a positive contribution. And young Muslims in particular are coming closer to Islam at a faster pace, at a younger age than their parents, our parents were maybe in the 50s and 60s.
So before coming to the causes of this, because this is quite strange, in fact, for many years the perception was that the more we are going to settle down in the West, the less we are going to be religious. What you are describing and many surveys are showing it's exactly the opposite, that we have a percentage of Muslims much more committed to Islam. This commitment, what do you mean by commitment? Because you talked about politics, you talked about solidarity work. What is to be committed to Islam in your understanding?
It's rediscovering your faith. We all go through our lives where we have a low point where we don't practice our faith, and we somehow get an awakening. And I think some people, maybe at university or at school or college, people get a reawakening, a recalling, if you like, to come closer to Islam. So in many ways, it could be a spiritual ways. If you, you know, for example, certain Sufi groups, you know, have remembrance programs. And so this is a way to do, or scholars travel around the country and deliver lectures, and this is a way in. So there's a variety of different ways. Sometimes in occasion, when we saw the occupation of Gaza in 2006, we saw the Lebanon War, for example, and that's where Islam again is in the forefront of people's mind, and people rediscover their political identity, which comes in Islam.
It could be many dimensions. Yes. It could be spiritual, it could be politics, it could be solidarity, it could be social. Why? How do you explain this? How is it that you know, the parents coming from Pakistan, coming from North African countries, coming from around the world, they were religious by definition or by culture, because they were coming from these countries and they were trying to be faithful to what they got from there, and now the youngest generations are much more committed, and they want more to know more about Islam. How do you explain this? In industrialized society, secular society, what could be the causes of the whole process?
Well, it's very much to do that. For example, my parents' generation, when they came here, they were very uneducated. They had low level of education and attainment in terms of both secular education and religious education. They came here to work, to make money, and to have a good life, and to get the best for their children. And when it came to my generation, second generation or third generation or even fourth generation now, there's a lot of emphasis on education. So children are going to university, they're interacting with their fellow colleagues, and then we've got the explosion of the internet and television channels like Press TV. We've got this huge 24/7 media cycle where there is a lot of interest and there's a lot of negative focus at times or towards Islam, and it's then when people begin to recollect what's going on. I met somebody recently who, as a result of the ban on the burqa in France, was actually inspired to get involved in more in Islam and giving solidarity to our brothers and sisters in France who were fighting the struggle against.
So the positive impact of the bad media coverage.
Yes.
It could happen as well.
Yes.
And you are referring to September the 11th.
September the 11th, yes. I think, was a moment of reflection for our community, because people felt that our faith was under attack. We knew that amongst our myths there were terrorists and extremists who had this evil ideology, who wanted to use violence to kill innocent people, which goes contrary to our faith. So we had that on one side. And then we had George W. Bush and his war on terror and his "you with us or you're against us" slogans, which again pitted us. And actually, it allowed people, young people in particular, to start researching Islam more, to spending more time with classical scholars and learning more about Islam and coming closer to God. And as a Muslim, I believe that Allah Ta'ala, God, provides the opportunity to be inspired. The destiny, you know, to be inspired. So people who've drifted away from the faith come back as a direct result of God's blessings upon those people.
Yes. What would you respond to the people saying, that's all good, and the image that you are, you know, describing is very positive. At the same time, when it comes to the reality, what we see among the young Muslims today, it's very often a perception or coming back to Islam, which is quite on the defensive. Is, oh, you are attacking me, so this is my identity. So it's a negative identity. It's not a positive, assertive identity. It could be a negative identity, or it could be also a very narrow understanding of, oh, Islam is all about the rules and not about the spirit. It's about, you know, limits and not about halal and haram. It's lawful and lawful and not about the meanings of things. What would you respond to this? Is this true? Is this a distorted image?
No, I think there's an element of truth in that, and I think in particular we have forgot responsibilities towards our neighbours, whether they're Muslim or not Muslims, working more on a more level of interfaith, tackling some of the conspiracy theories that some of our young people have. I spend a lot of time in the community, and where you hear some wacky ideas about things in life. And it's important that we also focus on the social element of our faith as well, because I think that's very important. So the way we treat our neighbours, the way we treat our family, responsibilities towards wider society, the environment, for example, climate change. These are all issues that actually individually people will be attracted to. Some young Muslims will come back to Islam, if you like, because of the issue of climate change or the environment, or come back because of the issue of interfaith.
Is this what you see on the ground, or is it much more young Muslims coming back to their Muslim identity, working within the Muslim organization among Muslims? What, in fact, Cameron was saying is, be careful, because the Muslims are self-segregating themselves. You, with your organization, trying to reach out, you are much more representing the exception than the rule. This is his perception. Would you say it's right or wrong?
I've always taken issue with the Prime Minister David Cameron's comments. I was very clear that the problem with this government and previous governments has been that they link the issue of multiculturalism and integration with the issue of security. Yeah. And that's the problem.
It's not the only country.
Across Europe is that the issue of security and integration has been mixed into this pot. Yeah. And so you've got to deal with the issue of security, and you add on the issue of integration. And I think the whole mindset of this government, the British government, of which I've had to engage with on various occasions, I've met the Prime Minister, I've told him such, that we find his comments offensive, we find them an offence, because we believe, I'm second generation, as you said, I've got English friends, I've got Jewish friends, I support Manchester United, and when England play Pakistan, I sometimes support England. The emphasis on sometimes. but the point is, I live an integrated life. Hmm. And if you ask Muslims up and down this country, particularly young Muslims, we do live integrated lives.
But Mohammed, for example, he might listen to you and many governments in Europe are listening to voices such your voice and others. You know, the way I'm talking is exactly the same, that we have to reach out, we have to open up. But at the same time, what we are told, and you got this as an answer, is that you are not representative of what is happening on the ground, and the great majority of the Muslim organizations are still working among themselves. Is that true, or would you say, no, that's not true, this is changing?
I think it's an offensive term from the Prime Minister to suggest that Muslim organizations are insular. We have active work with community work. So if you look at the major Muslim organizations in this country, we're all working towards a better understanding between all communities. For us in the Ramadan Foundation, it's our central value and ethos is to build a better understanding of Islam. And the way you do that is to reach out. You have to have that outreach.
You would say it's the mainstream today among the Muslim
Absolutely.
Organizations?
Absolutely. I mean, there may be small organizations who may just cater for the Muslims. But I think this whole debate has been hijacked by those who want to demonize and attack and label Islam and Muslims. But they don't want to concentrate on what they should be doing. The responsibilities of the white community. For example, if we look at Bradford...
What do you mean by the white community?
I mean the English Christians, whatever term you would like to use towards the...
But it's as if you are once again portraying them as them versus the Muslims.
No.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean is, for example, that the integration is a two-way street.
Yes.
So yes, the families who have come into this country have a responsibility to integrate themselves, to learn a language, to better themselves and to contribute to society.
And you are saying they are doing that.
And I believe that they are doing that, and I think they're doing it at a huge personal cost to themselves. But then on the other hand, you've got white families who isolate themselves, where, for example, they're living in an area where Asian families move in, white families move out, known as white flight, in places like Bradford, and where their children are going. We see predominantly 90% Asian, for example, in Oldham, for example, or Bradford, where we used to see 95% of the students Asian in one school and 95% of the students are white in one school. In Oldham, for example, they've done something very good. They've knocked them schools down, they've created a new school, and they've merged the white school and the Asian school. So, there's a lot of work that we can do, but I think, just focusing on the Muslims, as the Prime Minister and this government has done, there are some elements of what the government do I support. But I believe on this they're absolutely wrong, and they're making the same mistake that Tony Blair made, Gordon Brown made, which is.
But this is the main problem that we have with many European governments, and not only the British government, is really to say, okay, look, we don't want this self-segregation process. It could be done by the Muslims or by the immigrants, and it could be done by, as you said, the white community. Yeah. It's just the indigenous community self-segregating itself. In fact, is there an option for a government? Could they do something? What would you suggest to change the situation, coming from, you know, a top-down strategy? And then we'll talk about the bottom-up strategy. But let us first focus on the top-down strategy. What could be done to change this?
It's very difficult because, you know, these communities are very established. When my parents
which
came,
is the problem, yes.
Which is the problem, is when my parents came in the 50s and the 60s to Birmingham, it was a time of racism, National Front, Combat 18. There was a lot of right wing extremist groups who were attacking the Asian families, and so it was common sense that you lived in an area amongst your own community that give you an element of protection,
security and protection.
Yes, exactly. For some families now who've prospered, who've moved on, who've got better careers, their children have been educated, they've moved on into more affluent areas. So I think it's dangerous because if you believe in freedom and if you believe in choice, in a liberal society, as the Western societies constantly tell us, then trying to engineer integration. Or trying to force integration communities together without that grassroots support is going to fail.
But what would you say to people, for example? I met many people in the States, in Germany, in Europe, saying, "What's all the discussion is completely wrong. It's just to live together doesn't mean that we have to mix. That let us try to find our security and protection the way we want, and let us live together. Even if it's not in the same place, at least it has to be done in a way where we are protecting the people." What would you say?
And there's an element of when we need to come together with the Jewish community, when there's anti-Semitic attacks, for example, on Jewish graves, and we need to come together as a society and as a community, we do that. Mm. It already happens. We've got very strong links. Yes, we disagree with Palestine and Israel. We will always disagree upon that. But on other issues, we agree. And it's right that we support each other. So when, for example, in Birmingham, the three boys that were killed in the recent riots, it was the Sikhs standing with the Muslims to protect the mosque. And it was the mosque and the Muslims protecting the Sikhs. So, you know, integration. I was at that funeral. I saw Jews, I saw Christians, I saw Muslims, I saw Sikhs, everybody, Hindus coming together. In an element of integration, demonstrating that integration works.
So we need to take advantage of some of the situations.
Yes, we can live in our own little communities, but there's nothing wrong with that.
There is nothing wrong with that at all.
Okay. And if they want to come together, I think it's important that we do that. So we encourage communities to come together, for example, to celebrate Eid together, to celebrate Christmas together. Obviously, we don't believe in Christmas, but you can go along to the church and show solidarity as we do in my hometown.
Okay, so let me come to one question here. If we think about the bottom up strategy, you are working at the grassroots level, your organization in Manchester. You have been working with others, and you know how it works. So what could be now done for the young generations who are more committed to Islam to be once again and to change this image, this negative image of Islam that still is the majority image in the West? What could be done at the grassroots level?
Well, I think firstly the mosques need to take a huge responsibility in trying to recruit British-born imams who provide us with that leadership. We are starting to see a significant number of imams come through now who are the leaders here in the UK, who are the leaders who are leading the prayers, but as well as that, inspiring the youngsters. I know in my hometown where we have three English-speaking imams in one particular town, and you've actually seen a number of young people who come to prayer there, who come to listen to the imams there, deliver their lectures. It's actually gone up.
So what do you mean here is that the discourse coming from within the community should be rooted into the environment.
Absolutely. I think we've got to start looking at some of those taboo issues. It's absolutely wrong that we're not talking about forced marriages. We're not talking about honor killings. We're not talking about grooming that goes on among some elements of our community. These are the issues that we need to address openly. And I think because we live in a 24/7 media cycle, we've got to be very clear that people are getting news about things that happen in our community, yet our imams and our Muslim organizations, and I pay tribute to them all, I'm not criticizing anyone in particular, but generically, I think we've got to do a lot of more work to provide a positive image of our community.
But isn't it this the problem, that we are scared to criticize anyone and say, okay, I'm not going to criticize anyone? Is this not something which is missing within the Muslim communities, that we don't have this critical thinking, that we are not facing some of the challenges?
Yes, I think you have to be very careful. You have to be very diplomatic in that you don't unnecessarily upset your brothers and sisters who work in other organizations. I remember, as David Cameron was saying, we're going to cut funding for organizations that do not sign up to British values. I reminded him that actually 90% of British Muslim organizations don't get any funding from the government. We're not reliant on any funding from the government. So I think the point is very clear that we criticize elements of certain organizations that may do something wrong without getting personal about the individuals who are involved in that and the work that they do. Let's keep focus on the issue rather than the personality.
And the issue is really to try to reach out.
Yes.
And what you are saying is the discourse from within the Muslim community.
Yes.
Yes. Do you think, and just very quickly, do you think that we are now reaching getting better relationship with Christians and Jews and our fellow citizens? Do you think that this is also moving?
Yes, I think it is. I spend a lot of time where I'm meeting Hindus and Sikhs and Christians and Jews. And I think out there in the community, Muslim organizations are engaging at a grassroots level with those different organizations. But part of the problem is we've now got a hardcore right element who are trying to demonize and attack Islam and pull communities apart. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to focus them together.
Thank you so much. I think that during this discussion, it's quite important what you are saying, because as you were saying, it's a two-way process, that the Muslims should do things to change. And what you were saying about the multiple dimensions, people are coming back to Islam because of spirituality or solidarity work or politics even. And at the end of the day, it's quite important to get a better understanding of Islam. But at the same time, within the society, there is something which is, as you were saying, there is nothing wrong living with the people with whom we feel insecurity. The point is that to take advantage of the situation, to come together and to share values and sometimes, situations where we can come together and show that at the end of the day, Britain or Europe is made out of all these communities and these religions coming together in specific situations. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Muhammad Shafiq. Thank you so much for
your
energy and your input. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.